Hello, I'm Simon.
And I'm Dan.
And this is the Wikicast, a podcast where Wikipedia takes us to a random article each week and we talk about what we find. Daniel, what are we talking about this week?
This week, Simon, we're talking about Segway Incorporated.
Oh, nice.
As in the Segway. This might be the best random article we've ever had. Because, there is nothing more random than a Segway, is there?
The trot's gone of trot's transportation. Gone, yeah.
So what we've got is founded in 1999, which I didn't realize it was actually that old. Segway Incorporated is the manufacturer of the two-wheeled self-balancing Segway, the Segway Mini Pro and other personal transporters, founded by inventor Dean Kamen. Carmen. The name Segway is a homophone of Segway, a smooth translation literally for Italian for follows. There you go.
How is that a homonym?
Homophone.
Homophone. How is that a homophone? It's just the same word.
That's what it is, though, but it's spelled differently, isn't it? S-E-G-U-E and S-E-G-W-A-Y.
I thought they were both spelled W-A-Y. Oh, I've learned something today.
There you go.
Okay. That's interesting, actually, that the company has now just become so widespread, because I can't have been the only person that thought that the transition Segway was also spelled W-A-Y.
Mm.
That's interesting. So,
the first
have
patent
you ever been on one?
No, I haven't. But he filed the first patent in 1994 and granted it in 1997, so put ages of work into it.
So the guy who founded the company, did he invent the Segway?
Yeah.
So he's an engineer by training?
He's a inventor. Apparently, yeah.
Oh, so that's one of those job titles where I think if you were in school and you'd be like, yeah, I want to be an inventor. Good luck being the careers advisor for that kid. Because, in my mind, to be an inventor, you have to be basically like Caractacus Potts and just kind of have a really weird life and have a shed full of bits and bobs and be like Colin Furze from YouTube.
He is the son of Jack Kamen, who's an illustrator for Mad, Weird Science, and other EC comic publications.
Oh, what a cool family.
Look at that. Yeah. He's an American engineer, inventor, and businessman. He's best known for Segway.
So what else is he known for?
Inventions. Let's have a look. In 1989, he founded FIRST, which stands for Inspiration and Recognition of Science and Technology, a program for students to get people interested in science, technology, and engineering.
Cool.
That was his first one. And then, Segway.
Presumably, Segway is the most, profitable thing he does. This must be his, his bread and butter of his inventing life by this point.
So apparently Kamen was already a successful and wealthy inventor after inventing the first drug infusion pump and starting a company, Auto Syringe, to market and manufacture the pump. So that's where he used that money to put into... he also holds patents for technology used in portable dialysis machines, an insulin pump, and an all-terrain electric wheelchair.
These are very different. I'm really into my biomedical sciences and my sort of pharmaceuticals, and also into wacky vehicles. The Venn diagram of those interests has no overlap whatsoever.
So that's actually this all-terrain wheelchair looks absolutely amazing. It's called the iBot. And there's a photo on his personal Wikipedia page of him in the White House with President Bill Clinton, and Kamen, the guy who's invented it, is in this wheelchair. The wheelchair uses many of the same gyroscopic balancing techniques that were put into Segway later on.
How do you spell iBot? Because I just spelled it E-Y-E-B-O-T and I got a bunch of stuff from Fallout.
Yeah, no. Lowercase I, capital B-O-T.
Ah, right. Oh, that's not as cool as the thing from Fallout, I'll be honest, which kind of looked like a Sputnik type thing. Okay, that's pretty cool, actually.
Mm.
Did you ever play, because that was from Fallout 4, I presume, that I was looking at. Oh, no. No, I think it's in 4 and 3. Because we have Fallout 4, but neither of us have played it. Is that right?
No, I haven't played it. No, Ed's played it quite a bit. He quite likes it. He's played all of the Fallout games, though, so he's a big fan. But no, I haven't played
it. Big fan of the post-apocalyptic mess. So you can see that in his bedroom, really.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there's a correlation in this case does, again, mean causation.
And Horizon Zero Dawn was the other one that we've got, and neither of us have played, but he's devoured.
Excellent game. He's completed that.
Oh, has he at last? Oh, okay. again, post-apocalyptic, kind of zero technology, very primitive. Ed's really taken his inspiration from his games. But no, I've never been on a Segway. It's been one of those things that I've always wanted to do, because you see them, like, every major city, it seems, has like Segway tours now.
Mm.
Or like if you go to Center Park, you'll have like fleets of people on a Segway.
I've always been a little bit put off by them. I don't know. They seem, I don't trust them.
They look like you should fall over.
Mm, exactly.
Which is, was it, am I right in saying that President Bush, as in Junior, fell off one when it was like, oh yeah, don't worry, Mr. President, it's completely impossible to fall off of one, and he just didn't turn it on? I want to say.
No idea.
I'll Google that. I just remember that was one. Do you remember when America's president was an embarrassment, but it was for stuff like that, not literally being a sex offender and kind of spewing hatred? Like, it wasn't a lot of simpler time.
Yeah.
Like,
what a cool guy.
It's so... No, he's not a cool guy, Daniel. Trump is not a cool guy. And I will not have anything like that spoken. You massive racist.
Dean Kamen, you fool.
Ah, yeah, no, he seems pretty legit.
He's also... That's his profile picture, if that's what it's called. Excuse me.
You're right. Even coughing and spluttering. I've edited them all out, but even coughing and spluttering all over the place.
I'm not well, because I'm doing many things. All of the things. I never have any time to kind of... you know, everyone at the start of the academic year, everyone comes down with a bit of fresher's flu. I think in this instance, I've not had any time to get over the flu. To rub it in, I was at work yesterday and I had my free flu vaccination, because if you want a vaccination at work, they had a doctor come in and admit all the syringes and things. And I was like, oh, haven't I? Because I was just coming out of the cold, and then they said, "Oh yeah, just bearing in mind, some people have been having some funny reactions this year. It's been bruising for some, and yeah, you can get a bit flu-y after having the shot." And I'm like, "Oh great!" So I'm just going to kind of continue my illness through for another week or so.
So I've just been doing a little bit of digging on set, because I was right. George Bush fell off a Segway in hilarious fashion.
Right.
Yeah, okay, now this is interesting. So, what was the name of the guy who invented the Segway?
Dean Kamen.
Dean Kamen, right.
K-A-M-E-N.
Right, so a guy called Jimmy Heseldon bought the Segway company, or Segway Inc. So, I guess he just took over the business stuff. And do you want to know, or do you want to guess how he died?
On a Segway?
Well... He was on a Segway for part of it.
Well, presumably he was on a Segway for part of it, and then he was off, and that's why he died.
Well, as in he rode his Segway off a cliff.
Ah, yeah, they're not great in the air, are they?
Yeah, they're not really equipped for aerodynamics. But yeah, he in 2010, he just apparently it was an accident. How do you accidentally, like, they're not fast things.
No.
Hang on, here we go. And it was in the morning. He fell 80 feet into the River Wharf.
Jesus.
Ramming speed, some might say, near Boston Spa. And, wow, yeah, just pronounced dead at the scene. Jeez. And he had an estate worth £340 million.
Crikey.
Just imagine that. Imagine that being the lawyer. Because it's one of those deaths that you never... He was 62, so, you know, I guess there's a chance that he was going to die. But, like...
I think there's always a chance you're going to die, Simon, irrespective of age.
Yeah, but I mean, as the probability, as you get older, that probability definitely increases.
Yeah.
But like, to being that lawyer, you're just like having a day, you know, just like your normal day, and you think, oh, I wonder how my client's doing. And then you get a phone call saying, by the way, you've got to divvy up £340 million of assets.
Mm.
Like, at least he left a will. Like,
yeah.
That's the point. Have you written a will?
Have I written a will?
Yeah, given how you're coughing and spluttering, it seems like a good idea.
Yeah, no, I think I should. No, I haven't. I haven't written one.
Because it was one of our favourite YouTubers, Tom Scar. He's my age, and he was talking about writing a will in his most recent vlog. Because I haven't done it either. I don't know if anybody I know my age has.
I don't think many people our age do. I think it's something that you do, like when, I don't know, when you take out a mortgage and you know.
Yeah, you have financial.
You're starting a family and you've actually got to think about, or when you reach a point where your estate or your earnings, holdings and assets are worth enough that you actually have to consider where they're going to go.
Well, this leads me on to my next question, which is, of course, what will happen to the Wikicast if one of us dies?
Ugh. I mean, straight in with the cheerful topics of conversation on this Thursday morning.
don't date the episode, Christ.
Oh, yeah, crap. On this Monday morning, on the... Because, you know, because we just had Halloween last week.
Yeah, Halloween 2016.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. It was a good one, wasn't it?
We're actually clairvoyant. We're just talking about stuff and hoping that it happens.
We transcend both time and space. I don't know what would happen. I think... Out of respect, I mean, if let's say if you died, let's just say, I mean, yeah, as you've already pointed out with probability, although I imagine that the statistics would probably balance out given my current health.
I wonder what you were going to say there, given like your current, I don't know, like relationships, just like you're likely to get stabbed or something.
I think we'd stop the podcast. I'd just do it out of respect. I wouldn't feel right doing it without you.
Oh, I would have. I'd just replace you with someone and carry on.
Oh, really? Okay. You'd have to, but think of all the. You'd have to change all the media for it. You'd have to, you know, the whole Dan and Simon debate would have to be completely rewritten.
No, I'd just get Sue Perkins on. She'd be able to carry on, and no one would be able to tell the difference.
Okay. I mean, I suppose if you died, I could always just give the Elephant Man a ring and see what he's up to, and
yeah,
you know, if he's
or that guy from
free.
The Goonies. Just like, hey, you guys.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about. No, I think if you died, I wouldn't want to continue the podcast because of all the memories.
It would bring up things, I think.
But like, if somebody just like started coughing in the middle of recording, I'd be like, Dan used to do that.
You cough just like him.
I had to censor all of his audio when I was talking as well.
That would be weird. I don't know. I was just thinking actually. Say one of us did die and we stopped the podcast, it would be quite eerie just having these in the back catalogue, being able to listen back to, because it's, you know, I don't know if anyone can tell, but a lot of this this podcast isn't really scripted. Shock horror.
Don't give it away.
but just to have it, because with it being having such a conversational quality, I imagine that would be really, really hard to have and listen to if one of us popped our clogs. Shrugged off our mortal coil, as it were.
Well, I mean, it's one of those things where you will see now. I know at least two people on Facebook who are actually three people who are dead, and their profile's just there, and it just stops. You know, some cases you'll get like the parents will write a post saying sadly they've passed away or whatever. But it is so strange, and in a world where we treat the permanent as being ephemeral.
Mm.
A sudden abrupt end, or even like a kind of a gentle end, even if you, because presumably we're getting to the point where people have had Facebook for long enough that it's the older demographic. Some people will just sort of die of old age. And eventually there's going to be like a digital graveyard, like every social media platform. I mean, every social media platform eventually will be a digital graveyard, either because the people dies or the platform dies. Like I presumably still will have like, well, I didn't, you know, but for example, a MySpace account. Like, I think how many MySpace accounts are just in there in like a completely silent graveyard. But I think YouTube's a particular example of that because it is so personable. And this podcast I view as an extension of that YouTube stuff. I suppose it's a bit like Esther, you know, the nerdfighter that Esther Day is named after.
Yeah.
Because she left all of her video blogs up. Same thing with Tom Scar's friend Ed. He died. It is weird, actually. It's something that online culture just simply hasn't been around long enough to really process. I mean, we talked about the maturity of YouTube as a platform last time, but just sort of as a digitally, you know, are we ready to have digital graveyards yet?
I suppose too. It was one of the things. One of the episodes. I know I mentioned it briefly in the previous episode, Black Mirror, which is an excellent series, brilliantly, brilliantly written. One of the episodes they talk about there is this concept of kind of, you know, it's not uncommon in sci-fi, but the whole digitally uploading your consciousness and allowing to kind of persist after death in one way or another. I mean, how far are we away from that in terms of kind of the rate of technological growth? So, you know, think of how far we've come in the last century.
It's a weird thing though, right? Because I think this actually ties into what I'm reading at the moment, which is John Green's, I've got to say, excellent Turtles All the Way Down. To upload just what's in your brain, like just the information that's in your brain, I think a lot of people would view that as being uploading your personality, but it's not really. It's, you know, because you as a person are so much more than just the information in your brain. You are, you know, you contain multitudes. You have your bacteria that within you that are constantly changing your brain chemistry and constantly changing your thought processes, along with your diet and your food and everything. And I think you could argue that a large part of consciousness is how you react to changing circumstances. And so to capture somebody as a snapshot wouldn't really be an accurate portrayal of them as a person.
No, it's like the same kind of, it's touched on when I think it's, no, this is a test. I think Dumbledore is explaining to, gosh, excuse me. Dumbledore is explaining to Harry how coming back as a ghost works.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because he was talking about one, whether Sirius would come back and Dumbledore said, no, of course
he would have been brave enough to choose the alternative.
Mm. Yeah. And just how the whole kind of like it's not, it is just kind of like a projection, almost like a projection and a reflection combined. They're so not what the person was. It's similarly with bringing people back with the Resurrection Stone. You know, the stories that the tale of the three brothers they tell.
He brought his wife back?
Yeah, he brought his wife back and then killed himself to join her.
Yeah, because she
cheerful
wasn't
stuff.
At home.
Cheerful stuff this morning.
She wasn't at home in the land of the living, yeah. I'm just trying to find it. I'm trying to find a statistic for how much information content there is in the brain, because that was something that I just assumed would be a limitation, would be that it's just too much information. But, I mean, there's something like 100 trillion connections between neurons. But I'm not finding a... I actually did a video about this. I don't know if you remember, about brain chemistry. And about how you can never recreate the brain using just electronics, because there are basically different kinds of current that go through the brain. But I don't think that hold true necessarily for information. But I'm not. If anybody is an expert in information content of the brain or neurochemistry or neurophysiology, and you're listening to this, do send us an email, because I'd certainly be interested to hear from you.
Yeah, for sure.
Hang on, I just found a source for the amount of information. Do you want to guess at the information content of the brain?
What? How are you quantifying content? As in, like, storage? Imagine if it was an SSD and doing it by storage.
Yeah, like, how many bytes?
10 million terabytes or something.
So, hang on, that's 10 to the 18. You're actually in the right ballpark, yeah. Obviously, it's not... You know,
it's hard to quantify.
But the estimate that I've just got from, admittedly, it's a forum, is between 10 to the 17 and 10 to the 18 bits.
And no, really?
8 bits in a byte. So,
pretty close.
Yeah, pretty good guess, considering you pulled it from out of your ass.
It's because, I was just thinking about, I've started my technical specialist training at work.
Oh, yeah, here we go.
So I've been doing a load of, you know.
Sorry, that qualifies you to talk about the information content of the brain.
No, it qualifies me to talk about hard drives, and then my perception of hard drive space, I think, allowed me to make a slightly more educated guess. There's been so many things. I've been actually kind of been doing stuff physically in store, but a lot of the time it's been sitting in front of one of the computers backstage and taking quizzes and tests and exams and reviewing things and just getting my information up to scratch.
I mean, it's quite telling that your thoughts go from a discussion of death to a discussion of your new job training at Apple.
It's a lot. It's a lot to do, but it's a lot of fun. It's a heck of a lot of fun.
Yeah, it sounds it, mate.
It's a lot of fun.
I'm an old man, and I'm falling over.
And I can't get up.
Oh, God, that's mixing references. Bloody hell.
Yeah.
That's a Red Letter Media reference. For those of you who don't watch Red Letter Media, you absolutely should. Because if you like listening to this podcast and you like our sense of humour, you absolutely need to watch Red Letter Media.
Also, it was a merging of that Red Letter Media reference and
one
of the old Yogpod podcasts, which is the original podcast that Simon and Lewis of the Yogscast did back when... Before the Yogscast was really, really even almost a thing, when they were their channel name was Blue Zephos,
and they were talking about World of Warcraft
years ago.
Actually, because basically those, I think it'd be fair to say that Red Letter Media and Yogscast are probably our favourite collectives online to watch. Along and the Oscast is like huge. There's loads of people in it, including Hat Films, which is how we kind of met. Actually, I wanted to ask you based off of based off of the video, which you might not have seen, because I know you've been watching a lot less YouTube, haven't you, recently?
Yeah, hardly a bit, literally hardly anything. I've been watching every now and then if I get if I have some time, or if I'm in bed and I want to stick something on for 20 minutes before I sleep. It's been the new playthrough of Divinity Original Sin 2.
Yes! On the
Team Double Dragon channel, which has been amazing. It's such amazing. A good game.
Two such dads game. And one old man who are just playing video games, and it's just us. It's so good. But no, the question I wanted to ask you is, Hat Films did a video recently, it was a GTA playlist, where it turns out that Trotty-san, everyone's third favourite member of the Oscast, doesn't use toilet paper. He uses wet wipes to wipe his bum.
Oh my god.
My question, which I think I can guess the answer to, is, have you ever done that?
No. Oh, well, I have done it, because like, if you're in a situation where there isn't any toilet paper, then obviously then a wet wipe has to be the next best thing. But I can't stand the whole kind of... Obviously, it's from a hygiene perspective, it's much better. Yeah. You know, because the wet wipes are often antibacterial. They're not just like wet tissues. But the feeling of moistness is not something that I could say I'm comfortable with.
A moist anus
is not up there on my list of desires.
Well, you didn't put it up there.
That's actually where I've been going wrong.
You just cheeky finger. Just
yeah, whoop. Cheeky finger.
but like, what situation are you going to be in where you're going to have baby wipes but not toilet paper?
I don't know.
And you're in a toilet. Like that's it's not like you're just going to take a dump in the middle of, you know, Boots.
You might go into a public restroom and there's no toilet paper there. But if you're a, you know, you're a dad out on the town and you're carrying around some baby wipes for your kid, you might happen to have it, you know, in that situation. Then I'm sure that it's, I mean, I suppose in that situation too, you could probably just put a nappy on and go to town.
Yeah. To be fair, I think if you were to walk into a toilet, like imagine you go to a really fancy, like swanky company, like for example Segway, and you go into the bathroom, and instead of having like toilet roll holders, there's just a butler who has a silver platter, and he's like, "Wet wipe, sir," and he'd like take whatever you think you're going to need in the cubicle as you like go in. Like I'd be seriously impressed. Like I'd be like, "Oh wow, this is next level toilet." You know, or if they had like several options, like they had like regular toilet paper, baby wipes, wet wipes, I don't know what else, ferns maybe, like dock leaves,
fern cottons.
I've actually used ferns to wipe my bum before.
Really?
Don't do it. They cut. Oh, as a place you do not want to. You don't want to cut.
Also, ferns are notorious. Well, I mean, I would have thought that they're notoriously bad because the underside of a fern is just covered in spores.
Well,
that's how they reproduce, isn't it?
I was in a section of Dartmoor where it was either ferns or heather, and I was like, one's basically like a scrubbing pad that you'd use to get like a particularly stubborn saucepan clean, and the other one was a fern, and I was like, well, I mean, it's not great, but I guess I've got to do it.
You could just kind of like wipe your ass clean on a tour.
Yeah, just like a dog with worms, just like
find a kind of weather beaten kind of edge of rock and just kind of nestle in.
And then you're going to make eye contact with some other poor group of ramblers that comes up, and you're just there like kind of grinding,
gyrating
your ass against this rock, and be like, "You're right."
It's a good image. It's a good image.
You're claiming that tour as your own. No one's going to come near you after that. So we were talking about segues.
Yeah, how the hell did we get here?
I don't know. I mean, this podcast is partly. I think you could probably summarize this as like the Trinity podcast. It's three in one. It's the article. It's the random tangents that we go on, and it's Correspondence Corner. And I know that everybody has their own favorite part of it. I know, for example, Pixel Girl basically skips to Correspondence Corner, so she won't probably listen to this.
Fair.
You know, which frankly, honestly, I can't blame her.
Having it in the form, having kind of a kind of blessed Trinity structure fits with the Mormonism and Clark Catholicism religious sects of the podcast.
I definitely originally heard that as religious sects of the podcast. And I was
holy
sadly
not. Holy fuck! Yeah, well done. Sorry. I can't believe we've been chatting so far and we haven't mentioned Symphonic Evensong.
Oh my goodness! Yeah. Tell you what, I could put in that snippet of what it sounded like.
I was just going to suggest that. So for everyone who doesn't, so for those of you who perhaps forgot from last week or haven't listened to last week's episode and you're joining us for the first time.
Also, incidentally, we did 2 weeks in a row. We managed to.
Woo, smashed it. I sang and Simon recorded Symphonic Evensong on Exeter Cathedral this Sunday just gone. And it was absolutely glorious. Epic, epic music. Dyson in D, orchestrated by the brilliant David Davis. Elgar's Give Unto the Lord with two choirs, an orchestra, and basically a tenor section that any large choral society would kill for in the work. That's directly quoting Tim Noon, so you know it's good.
Here's a snippet of what you could have heard if you were there. Didn't that sound great, Dan?
Oh, wow. Epic. Just epic. It was so cool. It was so much fun.
It's literally, I've compared it to other recordings on YouTube, which only have the organ. Because that's the other thing to point out, is a lot of this kind of music, you did it as an anthem in a service the previous week, is that right? But just with the organ. Yeah. And with an orchestra, it's so powerful.
Like, definitely.
How high does that go, by the way? Is it an A or is it a G?
It's an A, yeah.
Oh, it's just, as you say, the tenors smashed it out of the park. And the whole thing, I'm basically editing all these videos together because I imagine for you it was a mostly fun experience.
Oh, for sure. Because, well, certainly for, with the exception of the psalm, which was John Rutter, and it was, just awful.
It sounded quite so nice. Cringe. It sounded quite nice.
Did it?
Here's a snippet. So, I'm just going to fill out this podcast with as many clips from... It's like a clip show.
I'm really hoping that when you're reviewing footage, you need to try and see if you've got a camera on the choir in the final Amen of the Magnificat of Dyson and D.
I believe
you need to see this because you need to zoom in on me, and I am singing so loud the first sopson, the first tenors go up to a top A right before the final kind of resolving chord, and I am singing so loudly that I don't know if you've experienced this phenomenon before, Simon, but certainly when I've kind of pushed my top range, not in terms of just kind of the kind of the pitch of the note, but the volume, I can't control what my lips are doing at all. As in, so I'm singing Amen, but my lips are going, like it just sounds ridiculous. And I remember, like, I'm gradually getting redder and redder and redder in the face. So if you review this footage, keep an eye out for me and you'll just see me pulling the most hilarious, just absolutely losing it. I'm basically about to take off. That's what's happening.
Well, I can't include the footage in this podcast, but I can include this clip of the end of the Magnificat.
So cool.
The whole thing was just insanely stressful for me because I was basically trying to do four people's jobs at once. Like I did not have the equipment to record it properly. So this, the audio recordings I'm not happy with, because basically we didn't have the space or the equipment. And in terms of cameras, I was trying to man four different camera angles simultaneously, which was just impossible. And there's not,
I think, next
cameras.
Time it would have made sense to probably say, you know, if we had that many tenors on the day anyway, and I would have, you know, I wanted to sing because it was epic music, but if it comes around again and we're not doing it, then I probably would have made more sense to be like, hey, look, we've got too many tenors as it is. Can I help man cameras, and just to have a bit more kind of manpower on the floor, you know, just to get around all the cameras.
I definitely interpreted that as man cameras as the noun. I was like, can I help old man cameras with this work? It would have been a help. Like, because certainly I was very limited. Just looking through the edit already, it's very limiting. Because when you, for example, in my head, it was going to be like a recording of the Proms or something. And if you actually break down a recording of the BBC Proms on YouTube, it's astonishing how many camera angles there are. Like, there's at least two or three different camera nests, and with each within each nest, there are several cameras. Whereas I think you saw when you walked, like, process past me, I was dual wielding these cameras on tripods, like trying to move them around simultaneously. It was a bit nuts, really. But
it'll be cool to see. I think, given that it hasn't been recorded before, whatever product we get, people are going to absolutely love. So it's a win-win.
To be in the building was an experience. So we just got to try and communicate some of that of that sound in the recordings. But yeah,
speaking of being in the building to be a success, next Thursday, everyone, a week today, I dated it.
Oh, for God's sake, week, again.
A week today in a year's time. Yeah, saved it.
Yeah, nice.
Is Exeter, University of Exeter Singers. No, that's not our name. Exeter University Singers. There you go. Professional. We're singing Choral Evensong in the cathedral. And last night at singers' rehearsal, Dr. Jones joined us to give us an idea of what the organ's going to be like. And holy fucking shit, is it going to be epic. Just epic. I can't wait. It's going to... Oh, man.
It's been a good season for music. Because, of course, yesterday as well, you also did one of my favourite pieces of music, which I was gutted I missed, which was...
the Mozart Mass in C, Sparrow Mass.
Yeah, which is... Here's a clip. I don't actually have a recording of it. I will include a little bit which explains why it's called the Sparrow Mass. So those violins are meant to be the sparrows. And it's really fun. Like, the older I get, the more I like Mozart. But you guys did it with instruments, which apparently...
You're going to play the Benedictus, right?
Yeah. The blam, blam, blam.
Yeah,
you did it with the... Was it the University of Exeter Consort?
I think that's what they're called. They're very good. We also did an absolutely epic... the consort and their two trumpets joined us in Guide Me, O Thou Great Redeemer in the final hymn.
Oh, nice.
And it was so loud. Like, St. Luke's Chapel isn't a very large chapel. It's a night. it's lovely, but it was just like, oh, man, you could have heard us from Plymouth. You know, it was so loud.
That's such a Devonian saying. It's like, oh, you could have heard us from Plymouth.
Those big lads down in Truro don't know what hit 'em.
Because I had a bit of a crappy day yesterday. I was just getting really confused by the stuff that my code was spewing out, and I was like, this makes no sense. And I came home just in time to miss the service, and I was surprised I couldn't hear it from my new undisclosed location where I live. Code sucks. PhDs suck. I actually just released a video just before this podcast started recording about which I'm very worried people are going to take as being very pretentious. But so far, the comments haven't said this. So
good.
You know,
okay. I'll be sure to kind of go straight in there and pretentious
like,
it out.
Yeah. Well, I've some of the comments I get. I've already put a video out before about my weirdest comments. Some people are morons. And the longer you spend on the internet, the more you realize that there are just morons all over the world. Including, what was it? I had one. Yeah. On the video called A Day in the Life of an Oxford Physics Student, somebody commented saying, what college did you go and what did you get and what did you study?
Nailed it.
Oh, my God. I may as well, what I might as well do is just literally apply with a link to the video he just watched. Because, oh my God, I just give up. I really give up with some people. Also, when I pinned a comment when somebody said, are you going to publish your thesis so we can read it? And I was like, okay, I'm going to pin your comment and say, for the last time, yes, I will. And then somebody replied to that saying, can we read your thesis? It's like, ah! Why? What? I'm losing my goddamn marbles.
There are morons everywhere. The internet just gives them a voice.
Yeah. It gives everyone equal
weight. Most morons are happy remaining morons and just keeping their moronic thoughts to themselves. Which is often what I do. You know, if I'll every now and then I'll think of asking something or thinking of saying something, and then I'll play it back in my head and go, actually, that is just ludicrous. And I'll stop.
That was one of the first things I remember talking to Pixel Girl about. Did I ever tell you the story about the question she asked that was too stupid?
I don't know, maybe, but go on, tell us again.
Basically, we were at the Impy, which is our favourite, one of our favourite Wetherspoons, the Chev, gone up in my ranking, gotta say.
For sure.
We were at the Impy, I think this was before you were here, and our friend Peter and was there, and our musical director Michael, and Liv, Pixel Girl. And basically, we weren't dating at the time, and I didn't know her terribly well. And so she wanted to ask me a question and was like, Peter, can you tell me if this question is too stupid to ask Simon? And she whispered something in his ear and he just laughed and was like, yes, that's too stupid. And then like about an hour passed and we eventually wheedled out of her that her question was, have we ever done a manned mission to Pluto?
Okay.
I
mean, exciting question.
It's great space to ask a question. Hey! A great space to ask a question, but a very, very clearly answered with a no. But it was Peter's original reaction. He just burst into laughter and was like, yeah, that's too stupid to bother Simon with his time.
Yeah.
I miss that boy. And I miss that girl. She's visiting this weekend.
Yeah. No, I'm hoping to catch her sometime on Sunday evening, I think. But I don't have... I'm away with Waycroft, so...
Oh, so you're not going to be at Compen?
I think I am. I'm getting a car back early. Right. I say early. Actually, no, I'm not. That's a filthy lie. I'm getting a train that gets into Exeter at 5. I'm just making
you
shit
filthy
up.
Filthy liar.
But we've got. I leave for Waycroft tomorrow evening. I think at about 5 o'clock. I'm getting a lift with
this
one
is
of the
for
girls
your singers
from the
away weekend of, of debauchery.
Our away game.
Your away game. Yeah. The University of Exeter Chapel Choir is away this season. University of Exeter 1, Plymouth Cathedral 0. Does Plymouth have the cathedral? I don't even know if it has a cathedral.
They've certainly got a bishop, haven't they?
Yeah, they've got a cathedral. Okay, I'm not a complete failure. It looks pretty unprepossessing, I'll be honest. It just looks like a regular old church. Yeah, I just like that, the way of the fixtures. And do you remember that guy who used to do, because he retired, or did he die? I think he's just retired from doing the football scores on Radio 5 Live. And he'd be like,
oh, right.
And he could normally, what Dad and I used to do as a game was we'd be driving back from going swimming together, and we'd guess what the second number was going to be based on how he intoned the first number. So like, Plymouth Argyle 4, West Ham 0. You could just, or if it was like Tottenham Hotspur 3, Arsenal 3, we could always tell. How did we get onto this? Oh yeah, because you're hopefully going to be there for Compline. Because what I was going to say was, I'm going to try and twist her arm because I want to go and see Dunkirk again, and it's showing at the campus cinema.
Oh nice!
After Compline at 9, so. I'd quite like to see it again. It was a complete masterpiece.
It was superb. I'm still so keen to see Blade Runner.
Yeah, Brave Runner. Yeah, because we actually talked about this in one of the podcasts that got deleted last time, Baxter. Well, 2 times ago. But you have watched the original Blade Runner now, the final cut.
Yep,
and you liked it a lot.
Yes.
I've seen the original Blade Runner. I loved the original Blade Runner. After my mum gave it to me when I was like 14 on like a really jank VHS tape, and it was the director's cut, not the final cut, but you know, I loved it even then. And I went to see on opening night the new Blade Runner. It's bad luck to say good night on opening night, but
it is
great to see the new Blade Runner because I loved it. And if you maybe if you could see it, Do you think you can see it before we record the next episode?
I'm sure I can try.
Because what I think, can we do a glitzy special, the Wikicast and Friends review Blade Runner 2049, and we do our reviews, and we also read out, and we basically pretend to be Komodo Mayo, and we read out.
Yeah.
We'll read out so if you have seen Blade Runner, or if you're interested in seeing Blade Runner, go and see it, and then email us at spongyelectric@gmail.com with your review, and we'll do a special, I'll do a jingle for it or something. We'll have like a special film review corner. And I'd love it if that became a regular thing, because we both bloody love films. To give you my brief review now, I loved it. Really, really did. And I don't understand people that thought it was boring.
It's really interesting, actually. I've been listening to, you know, the past couple of weeks' installments of Komodo Mayo's film podcast. And there's been some really interesting criticism about Blade Runner. Namely, what crops up most often is that people just... a lot of people write in and have said, well, obviously not a lot of people have written in, but any criticism that is written in, they say that they just felt it was too long and too rambling and too kind of caught up in its own, you know, which Kermode obviously slaps away and goes, you're chatting out your ass.
I mean, it's interesting. I think there's an argument to be said that it is too long and slow and pondering.
It's 2 hours, 40 minutes, isn't it?
It is a long film, but I'll be honest, I never felt like it was I never felt like it was dragging when I was watching it. I was conscious that, like, this is a slow pace. I was definitely conscious of that, but it didn't feel out, the pace didn't feel out of place, because the original film is very slow burning.
Yeah, when you're world building to the scale that you are in Blade Runner, I think it makes sense to go for to give a film a slightly slower pace than is normal, because it adds to the expansive quality of the narrative you're constructing and the world that you're seeing on screen.
It
almost, the speed almost creates a kind of an illusion of space on screen, and kind of like the world that they're building to be even bigger and more full and more detailed, because things are going that little bit slower. I think it would work. I mean, obviously I haven't seen it yet, so I don't know, I'm very keen.
That's a hallmark of the original, and the original's world building, as you probably would agree, is fantastic. Like, you feel phenomenal. So entrenched. And I think that this new one does exactly the same thing. I also think you could view it as being a reactionary film to stuff like Michael Bay, for example, stuff that is just bang, 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 bang. You know, like, if you were to clap I think this was in Komodo Mayo, if you clap whenever there's an edit, which is how American audiences watch films. Like in modern films, like a Michael Bay, it would be like bang, 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 bang. Whereas with this, they really let it take its time. And it's something like Christopher Nolan also does this. You know, it's what I would call the slow food movement of cinema. Like, it allows you to really seep into it, and I just think it's so much better. And our boy, our favorite director boy, Denis Villeneuve, knocks it out of the park. I really want to see Prisoners, because every other film I've seen by him has immediately gone into my favorite films list, like top 20. Because Sicario, you haven't seen Sicario, is that right?
I have seen Sicario.
Yeah,
did I not see it with you?
Campus Cinema?
I think we did see it together.
Did we? Okay, I couldn't remember.
Oh, actually, no. I watched it. I remember you were going on about it in chapel, and this is before we were very close. Yeah. So I watched it at home, and then I'm thinking of Eye in the Sky.
Yes. Yeah. That was a hell of a film.
What? Actually, I haven't watched that in ages. I'd happily watch that again.
But basically, the point being, Sicario, I thought, was phenomenal. I thought Arrival was fantastic. I thought Blade Runner was fantastic. And there's Prisoners, which has one of my favourite actors, Hugh Jackman, in it. And so I'm very keen to see that as well. Gavin Hood directed Eye in the Sky.
Gavin Hood, Robin's really shitty, underwhelming brother.
Robin,
steal from the rich, give to the poor. Gavin, just kind of, you know, do my own thing. You know.
Oh my God, you're never going to guess what he also directed.
What?
X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Oh no.
The one with Deadpool where they sewed his mouth shut.
No.
Oh wow. That is abysmal. Oh, well, that's wow. I'm so sorry.
Moment of silence, everyone.
For Gavin Hood's credibility. How does a guy go from directing such a crap film to directing what we thought was a real masterwork?
I don't know.
No, I don't know. We've actually been talking for quite a while, and I think perhaps we should move along these aren't the droids you're looking for. Move along to Correspondence Corner.
Okay, so that... Oh, God. Did you hear
that's
that?
That's staying in.
Oh, brilliant. Okay. let's try again. So okay. We've got a first email here from... I hate you so much.
It's like, that really reminds me. When I was in year six, we watched a film about puberty. And I shit you not, this film was called Some of Your Bits Ain't Nice. And there was a demonstration of, like, you're going to have some changes in your body, including your voice changing. And they said, it won't sound like this. And for some reason, this f***ing clip of a guy going, hello, just, like, stuck in my head. Apparently, that doesn't happen. But apparently, they didn't count on Dan Moore introducing Correspondence Corner.
When I'm ill, anything is possible. Right, okay. Okay. We have an email here from Trey, writing to Correspondence Corner. It says, Dear Dan and Simon, this is the white way. Don't at me, Simon.
No, he says, this is the right way.
greetings from North Dakota, United States. I'm a pre-med student here in... Sorry, I thought you said something.
I don't know why I cheered. It's my favourite state, North Dakota.
There we go. I'm a pre-med student here in the States, and I just wanted to say that I really enjoy listening to your podcast while studying for my countless exams. You guys are true top lads.
Thank you.
I do have a question, more so directed at Dan, who we've decided is the more fashion-wise one. But Simon, feel free to chime in as well. How does one properly wear a suit, with or without a belt? How many accessories is too many? And what is your ideal break for pant tailoring? Congrats on Dan on officially being an Apple employee now. And to Simon, your tweet about YouTube and demonetizing your PhD vlog was top keck. Also, dogs are superior. Cheers, Trey. Always a belt. Never without a belt in a suit.
We differ on this because I never wear a belt with a suit, partly because I can't afford to buy a black belt at the moment.
If you're tucking a shirt in, you have to wear a belt. It just looks ridiculous without it.
I mean, if I actually know that I did tell a lie, because when I recorded the Symphonic Even song, I had jeans and a shirt and suit jacket. I did wear a belt with that. But with suit trousers, I think because they are, it's just so uniformly black, I don't think you need a belt.
Often too, like if you're wearing something like black tie where your tuxedo is done up, you can't see the belt. So yeah.
I mean,
you probably get away with it
there. With a tux, you're better off wearing a cummerbund.
As far as, and what is your ideal break for pant tailoring? I have absolutely no idea what you're on about.
I don't know if that means like there'd be vents
like the
if they're a jacket. Like, yeah, on the sides.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I have no idea.
We don't understand your fancy American ways.
Yeah, jeez. Also, how many accessories is too many? One thing I would say is that it's very, if you're going to go for a pocket square, it's risky business matching your pocket square with your tie. Often you can buy them in sets. I personally wouldn't advise going for matching, but that's just me.
I mean, I don't really wear my suit with any accessories. I think keep it minimal. I think with a suit, part of the appeal of a suit is the fact that it is quite a minimalist outfit.
Yeah, it's simple, but it's sharp.
Yeah, so don't overdo it with accessories like lapel pins. If you know, like you see people with like Rotary Club ones, or in our fields, like, you know, you'll see like music pins or something. Mm. Maybe a pocket square. Don't overdo it. I think one or two at most.
Good questions, though, Trey. Hope we've answered them.
Très bien.
Très bien.
Next one. For f*** sake.
I'm sorry. I'm ill.
Look at me, how they all have pity on
me. I don't know if you can see what I'm wearing. Have you admired what I'm wearing?
No, the readers can't see, but I can. Yes, you look like Mother
Hubbard. I was talking to you, because obviously the readers can't see, you fool. it's a new set of pyjamas I got from Marks & Spencer in my lunch break the other day. It's brushed cotton, it's green tartan, they're matching, it's a button-up shirt, and I also have a rug over my shoulders just to keep me warm, and I've got my little slippers on.
Like a warden of the north, like a hipster Stark. Yeah.
I'm a car Stark.
As I was saying, we have an email from Alex Elg. Dear Monsieurs Moore and Clark.
Nice order.
Thanks very much. First of all, thanks for doing the podcast. It's cool. I like it, and I've been an avid vigilant reader since the beginning. Great use of the word I. Doesn't get used enough. Simon's YouTube channel has also been surprisingly comforting during the most stressful periods of the somewhat odd and convoluted general social science degree I'm currently pursuing at Institut d'études politiques de Paris, or Sciences Po for short. obviously, in the disturbingly picturesque town of Menton, nicely tucked in between Monaco and Italy. Oh, so I've been near there. I went to Nice with Pixel Girl. Very nice. Very nice.
Very nice.
Having written two law exams today, I'm currently trying to convince my academic advisor that it's absolutely necessary for my future and the survival of mankind that I'm allowed to study political science at Columbia during my third year. But I'm writing to you on the topic of your granted not too horrible pronunciation of Swedish. Hey!
We didn't
fuck it up!
Woo!
Completely. I mean, he did say it's not too horrible. That's like a C. On a grayscale. There are people from about 50 different countries on my campus, all pretty much equally bad at pronouncing Swedish words, and all pretty much equally terrible at realizing that the dots above letters, as you briefly noted, actually affect pronunciation. Since I failed miserably with my summer project of learning to write in IPA, I'm assuming that doesn't mean Indian
Pale Ale. Yeah.
That sounds like a great way to write. I'll provide a handy pronunciation guide using French. Alors, A with an a sort of like a circle over the top, which to me is the angstrom symbol, is roughly pronounced as the "ø" in Darnit. Oh. I thought, right. I read that as "ø" as in like the French for water. So Darnit. Ah. Hmm? Oh, okay.
No. So I think Darnit is a French word, so it would be Darnau, right?
This is confusing. Yeah.
I think an IT in French at the end of the word sounds more like an "ø." Darnau, like
he's referring to that, right? So yeah, Darnau, yeah. And a with a, oh god, is that a squiggle on top or is it a little,
it's a squiggle,
a circumflex,
yes,
yeah,
I believe so,
is roughly pronounced as the ai in Marie, so a, and then o with an umlaut, two dots, is roughly pronounced as the in. This is the. I don't know how to pronounce the French words.
Yeah, there's a fault here.
I think it's the "ø" in "per," because I think I always remember that the umlaut makes it sound like you're speaking Dwarvish, like it just lowers the vowel.
Hmm.
He's actually attached an audio recording of how the sayings are supposed to be pronounced, albeit in my Swedish accent, which is a remnant of Eastern Danish rather than Swedish. We have such a multicultural audience. We're like the anti-Brexit.
We're the best.
Right, I will include that pronunciation link. Here's a clip.
Jag fick en tupp i halsen. Smaken är som baken, delad. Han gled in på en räkmacka. Och finns det hjärterum, finns det stjärterum.
Back in the studio. Wasn't that great, Dan? Which you clearly heard.
Amazing, amazing. Put us in this place, tell you what.
Anywho, keep up the great work, Alexander. P.S. For some reason, I relate a lot to Dan, despite me being about twice his size. Oh,
thanks, man. Thanks, Alex.
It's not hard, to be fair. P.P.S. Cat, thank you. And then possibly my favourite P.P.P.S. we've ever received. Have you seen the B-movie trailer in Old English? It sounds like an Anglophone trying to speak Swedish. Well, we're obviously going to tweet the shit out of that.
We've got an email here from an Irish correspondent, and... My God, I don't think I'm ever going to be able to pronounce your first name. I'm so sorry.
Go for it. Go on.
They say I can call them Finn. So I think I'm going to go with Finn.
We have an email from FN2187.
Oh, for God's sake. Come on. Come on. You're better than that. Hi, Dan and Simon. Long-time reader, first-time emailer. I've been listening to your podcast on weekly park runs recently. Oh, nice.
Hey.
And for some reason, it seems to be helping to improve my times. I'd replace your choral and geeky, general geeky banter over my previous playlist of motivating running music any day.
Got there in the end.
Therefore, I must insist you continue producing. Shine bright like a diamond.
Shine bright like a diamond.
Like a diamond.
I like the idea that people are running, listening to us, as in you're literally, pretend that we're right behind you and we have like one of those sofa, motorized sofas,
yeah,
and we're just having a chat directly behind you and you're trying to get away from us.
Yeah. If this has already been asked, excuse me for forgetting, but where did you get the title music from? I love it. Thanks a million. I'm going to try it. Fionnuala?
Fionnuala. Yeah, that'd be how it's spelled Fionnuala. Answers on a postcard.
Cool, no?
We got the music from Google's library. It's I can't remember what it's called, actually. I'm gonna have to look
it's up. Green something, isn't it?
Greenery, yes. Greenery by Silent Partner, which is free to use, which is precisely
what a good memory. I didn't even look at anything. I just know it's associated with something green. Don't ask me why.
And I look it up every week. So, you know, my memory's just like a sieve. So it's the green you need. And in your timeline, it's the green that I see. What's that from?
I've no idea.
Princess and the Frog.
Ah.
It's from Friends on the Other
Side. I haven't seen
The
Princess and the Frog.
I've not either, actually. But it's from the middle of Friends from the Other Side. And he's talking to the prince about how he needs money. But it's the actual... It's Keith David who's doing it. He's so cool. But he's like, it's the green you need. And in your future, it's the green that I see. It's a great villain song. I'm a big fan of Disney villain songs. Also, did you know Tim Blaze of Acapella Science, if you're listening to this, hi Tim, he sent me a link. There's a Broadway musical of The Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
The music is so cringe.
Really?
Like, it's like at the start, Frollo is one of two brothers, and it's like, it's the same themes from the film, but it's like, oh God, I heard the chorus kick in, and I was just like, no. I'm going to go into my musical shell because it's so Broadway. It's like listening to the recording of Phantom of the Opera. And you're right. Just like, oh, God, this is cheese. It's like having Edam poured into my ears. That's one for the compilations that people will inevitably make of a weird shit we say.
We've got one here from Rahel.
I guess.
R-A-H-E-L. Hey, you two. I was just listening to your latest WikiCast episode 12, and while cooking myself some delicious mushroom and celerica? I think she means celeriac. Or maybe celery.
To be fair, she's typing like you are speaking today.
I don't know what's wrong. Okay, I have an excuse. And laughing at your rant about the lost episode when suddenly, with no warning at all, Simon came up with the brilliant hide-and-seek Google Cardboard idea. Do it. Love the podcast, Rahel. We definitely want to do it.
Say no more. I, funnily enough, I actually bumped into a friend of ours, Ellen, in the forum yesterday. Tried out an Oculus Rift, the... what's it called? VR goggles. And I was just like, yeah, with Google Cardboard, we could definitely do this. So in the future, I'll buy a bunch of Google Cardboards and we will... I don't know when it's going to be, but we will do it, I promise, because I think it's a genius idea because I came up with it. You're right there, mate. Next, we have an email, a somewhat judgmental email. From Clara Otto. Dear Messrs. Moore and Clark, I've been a long time reader from your podcast, first time writer, but I'm in longing to write to you guys, so here it is. First of all, I'm going to side with Dan on the dogs versus cats debate.
Yeah.
Now, actually, well done, Clara. I haven't mentioned this yet. Did you see my Twitter and Instagram and Facebook? Because I was quite proud of this. I got used as a climbing frame by a random cat the other day.
No, I did see this, yeah.
Literally, this amazing thing happened where I knelt down to pet this cat and he was like, oh, hello, you're friendly. And as I knelt down, he just jumped up on my knees and I was like, oh, you're quite friendly. And then he just jumps up on my shoulders and just bids me to like walk around. If I'd not leant over and basically had to move him off, he would have probably just come home with me like a parrot on my shoulder. So... don't get dogs doing that now, do you? I'm actually just contacting you, back to Clara's email. I'm actually just contacting you to tell you how appreciative I am of your podcast. I'm currently in a car on my way to Darmstadt in Germany to go visit some unis. Your podcast is one of the things that makes the travelling quite a bit better, so that's good. Apparently we are quite the travelling companions. We've had quite a few people email in about this. She continues, I am, as you could have guessed, part German. My dad's German and my mum's Italian, but I live in France or Switzerland. Yeah, it's complicated. Again,
jeez,
international
nice.
Audience.
Yeah.
I am able to speak pretty fluently four languages. So here I am listening to your podcast and, parentheses, nearly laughing out loud at some of your pronunciations of some foreign words. French, she's going to grade us. This is an episode 10, and she's grading us out of 20, just to throw some numbers at you. Simon, 13 out of 20. Great effort, but I'm still not sure how you came up with the pronunciation of some of those words. Whereas Dan, 15 out of 20, A plus for effort. I could actually understand most of the words you said.
Smashed it.
God's sake. I mean, there's not that big of a difference between us.
But we both need to improve.
Yes, we both need to work on our pronunciation. Is that an I or an L?
I think it's an L. I can't see it.
Either I's or L's. It's either a capital I or a lowercase l. There are so many different pronunciations depending on its connection to the other letters, so I don't blame you, but it's a nice try. In German, Chen, this is your point about the suffix, is actually there to project the size of the object, or it's sometimes used to mean cutify something. So they usually go together. You know, when it's small, it's cute. So you are correct, like in Dutch. Awesome. My 2 years of studying German, may as well have just forgotten them. Also in German, the W is generally pronounced like a V in the English language, such as in love. There we go for the linguistics.
Do you mean lower?
There we go for the linguistics. Incidentally, I am a big fan of how much linguistics there are. Has crept into our podcast because I love linguistics and communication.
Definitely.
And a linguist, come to think of it. Basically, she's saying, as for the rest of the podcast, very funny, much entertaining. Wow. I've been binge reading it, like it, and it's just great. And I'd be extremely pleased to participate in the Patreon when it's possible to. We've had a few emails about the Patreon. Some of you, we realize, are students and can't contribute. You know, we are students. We totally understand that. But it's really great to hear that some of you would be willing to put literally only $1 a month just to cover our hosting. So we will make moves on that, but we're not going to launch until we can do it properly. So, you know, it won't be for a few
weeks. I'll start looking into that today, actually, after we finish recording.
Of course, yes, because you have a day off.
I have a day off. It's the first day off I've had in like 2 weeks. That's why I'm in my pajamas, enjoying the day. It's been amazing.
Thanks very much for your email, Clara. She does say, PS, good luck on the final stretch of your PhD. Thank you. I am dying here. Today's actually been an okay day because I've only done like 2 hours work and it's one. It's going all right at the moment. PPS, I thoroughly enjoyed the discussions on geek culture. Well, you're in luck. We had a discussion about death, which was similarly serious this time around. I don't think I'm a geek myself, but I have been shamed for reading the Harry Potter books. Oh, at her age.
F*** them. No, that's any age. Harry Potter is just, ugh. Oh, did I talk about last time I went to, did I talk about my visit to the Harry Potter store on Platform 9
and 3 Quarters? Oh, you
didn't, no. I was in London for a thing, and I got into King's Cross Station, and on my way going back to Exeter, I was at the same station, and I got there about an hour and a half early just so I could make the most of the 9 and 3 Quarters shop, and I didn't buy anything, but my God, did I want to walk out with everything.
Because was there a huge queue for the trolley stuck in the wall?
Yeah, massive.
Whereas when I last was there, I was going to Cambridge and it was ludicrously late at night, and they actually take the trolley away. Like, it's not fixed to the wall, they just remove it so you don't get those cheeky free pictures by coming in the station late at night.
Fucking capitalism, man. There you go. We've got an email from Emily, which is a really cool spelling of it, actually. It's E-M-E-L-I-E. Hi, Simon and Dan. I was listening to one of your podcast episodes where Simon talked about when he biked into the bin. I did a similar thing, only that it was a rose bush. My mum and brother laughed at me.
Oh, no, at least bins don't have thorns.
Anyway, just wanted to say that I really enjoyed your podcast, and I'm listening to it on the way to university. I'm currently studying environmental economics at the University of Gothenburg in Sweden. Wow.
Oh, cool.
Also, dogs are much better than cats. I was bitten by a cat when I was little, and I've not trusted them since. Me too. I have attached a photo of my dog. It's a giant schnauzer. And wow, right, what bragging. A dog. What
it's a dog. That's a good boy. Look at him.
Yeah. I must say that your Swedish in the last episode was very good. Another saying in Swedish is... Oh, it's that one. That one that I like. Finns et charterum, finns et starterum. If there is room for the heart, there is room for the arse. The saying with the... Rakmaka, or shrimp sandwich, means that the person had everything handed to them without any hard work. Oh, I see.
Ah.
Gotcha.
Oh, this is interesting. Also, I love your surname, because I definitely want to read it as Arsbrink, which sounds like the top bit of your ass that like you have to be protective over if your trousers start slipping. It's like, oh, your Arsbrink showing. But no, I think it's... Thank you, Emily. Actually, how do you pronounce that? Because it's got an umlaut, I think. Emily... Asprink?
Yeah, I think it's a shorter A, isn't it?
Asprink, maybe. I don't know. Thank you, Emily.
Matthew Chasey's email. Do it.
He's just sent us an email with a subject. Patreon, Patreon, Patreon. And the email is just a picture of older Sheev Palpatine with do it.
Sorry, not do it, but do it. Yeah, nice.
Yes, thank you very much, Tim Sustverner, to the honoured Claw and Mark. I quite like
that. That's pretty good. Does that count as the right order for both of you? I suppose it does.
Yeah, it does. It floats my boat.
Claw and Mark should be our like tribal names if we ever go like, you know, like post-apocalyptic kind of, you know, that's our clan.
Oh, actually, I did want to talk to you about this because I did tag you in it, but you know, there's a mod being developed for Skyrim at the moment that's like Skyrim cooperative mode. Can we do a playthrough on Spongy and Electric as two barbarians called Claw and Mark?
Yeah. Also, if anyone wants to write some new fan fiction about the two barbarians or two Stone Age men, Claw and Mark, that'd be amazing.
Is just a normal name.
Yeah. I don't know. I kind of like that, though, because that would be like one of us would just not fit the time at all.
What, so like you're between the Paleolithic and the Mesolithic, and like Claw is like the really traditionalist, and Mark is just like, oh, you've got to use these really flint-chipped tools, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, so Tim has said, I absolutely love your podcast. It's become part of my weekly and mostly daily for back issues routine. I would like to thank you for making every day a little brighter. Well, you're very welcome. Aww. Even though a view of an overly tired student on the way to a lecture suddenly laughing out loud might be a little disconcerting for other students here. All right, I love this idea of making people just burst out laughing. Mm. Your attempt at pronouncing German words last night was highly entertaining, despite lacking some accuracy. Very brave attempt, though. Considering that the last description of my native tongue I heard was, it's like German wants to prove it's smarter than you. Which, to be fair, a description of English I've always been told is welcome to hell. Like, just nothing really makes any sense in English. Anyway, dogs for the win. Cats are the literal spawn of Satan.
Wise words, Tim. Wise words.
Speaking of heated internet debates, though, as Dan uses Apple products and Simon relies on a weird mix of Linux, Windows and Android, that's not that weird, would it be possible for you to explain the reasoning behind you choosing the respective platforms? I'm personally super deeply invested into the Apple ecosystem. It would be interesting to hear your respective reasoning. Why are you an Apple fanboy, Dan? Don't say it's because it let you play WoW.
Well, this is the thing. From a gaming perspective, Apple is really not helpful. The vast majority of PC game releases are not compatible on an Apple, on an OS X operating system. However, they're doing this. They're doing great leaps and strides into kind of reaching out now that Apple's kind of the tech within the machines, namely the graphics cards and processors, are getting kind of stronger and stronger and better and better. We started off on a Windows PC, and then I think at the age of, I would have been maybe 7, the family moved to Apple. I then grew up with Apple. I like their kind of ethos. I like their kind of attitude to how their operating system works, in that if it's super complicated and for a daily user, if they don't need to know that information, Apple won't show you unless you specifically ask for it. Whereas I think with Windows and Android, there's far more kind of like, do you want to do everything? Okay, do everything. And I think that can sometimes limit its accessibility for the general public, which is why Apple is so popular with students and kind of an older demographic too. It's just more intuitive to use.
I was told by a teacher once that with Apple, it's... to start with Windows, it's easy to do the basics on Windows. Anybody can. But the rabbit holes go very, very deep if you know where to look. Whereas with Apple, it's a bit like a shallow ocean in that everything is laid out for you. You can very easily get to the bottom of everything because the bottom isn't that deep as far as the user is concerned. Obviously, it goes very far, much further back from the back end. But you don't, at the fundamental level, have that as much control over the base processes, which is good for some people because they don't want that and it's intimidating and it's confusing. I've always just used Windows because we never were able to afford a Mac, so there was never really an option. But I like Windows because you do have, certainly from a tech perspective, you can go in deeper and you can control stuff.
Much more control.
Yeah. And in terms of Linux, I wanted to learn a new operating system and allow me to do that. It's also better, I think it's better for programming because you have easier access to the command line, and it's much more common to use the command line, and Android because I just prefer Android, but basically the same reasoning with Windows. You get a lot more customization with Android than you do with an iPhone. Well, that's that. That awkward pause.
Answered your question there, I think.
Thank you, Tim, and greetings. Oh, greetings from UEA. He says, Tim, Sistverner, I'm going to say, good luck trying to pronounce that German word. Well, I gave it a stab.
We have another email here from Aniela Shaw Miller. Good morrow, young sirs. That reminds me of that line in, you know, when the hobbits walk into the Inn of the Prancing Pony and it's, good evening, little masters.
From Ballymun Butterbur, the best name in Lord of the Rings.
Our business is our own. All right, young sirs, I meant no offence.
Talk of strange folk abroad. Can't be too careful, he says as he gets crushed by the ring wraith.
Good morrow, young sirs. Just a quick note. My owl is merely a fledgling, so I cannot burden it with too much weight. Love the podcast. Your tangents are like butterbeer. Sweet, frothy, but also rich. Keep them coming. Simon, I've watched your channel for years now, and it's been fascinating to see you grow and develop as a content creator. Upping your game in terms of gear and cameras definitely exacerbates your talent as a video maker.
Oh, thank you.
Also, I'm a massive fan of Dan, fellow classical studies student and Harry Potter obsessed. Obsessee? Obsessor?
Obsessed works. It depends what you mean. Like, you can say that you are Harry Potter obsessed, implying a state. Mm. But if you say that you are a person who obsesses...
Mm. I like obsessee because it looks funny.
Yeah, I like that. Lots of... Well, to repeat... carry on, Dan, I'm having a stroke.
Question. If you could polyjuice potion any composer, living or dead, so that you could, so that you would have written their complete works, who would it be and why? I look forward to your answers. Anyway, thought I would send you a quick snap of my evening. Hopefully Dan appreciates. Live long and prosper. Anyella. P.S. Dan, from what everyone is saying, perhaps we can assume gloriously liberated... Gloriously liberally browed could be your epithet. And don't worry about the other lack of compassion of your Gryffindor jumper seen in the vlog. They're just muggles. Oh, thanks, Anyella. That's good to know. She's attached a photo of a bottle of Doombar and Homer's The Odyssey, and it's the right the Richard Lattimore translation, which is the better translation.
I'm pretty convinced you're losing your mind, by the way. You need to have a lie down after this, I can tell.
This is the thing. This is the first time I've had the opportunity to take the day. I have to go to a chapel choir rehearsal in the evening. Which is going to be fun, but yeah, I don't know. I've still got some time to relax.
To answer the question about polyjuice potion, I think if you were to pick any dead composer, for example, if I was to polyjuice into Gustav Holst, I don't think people would be like, oh, wow, I love your work. They'd be like, Jesus Christ, he's back from the dead!
I'd like to be Elgar.
Yeah, Elgar was cool. I mean, I think Holst actually, I wouldn't mind. I mean, if I could be anybody, it'd be Bach. Because, like, the dude was a don. He was just a machine. Like, literally a robot for producing inspired music. And the longer I listen to the Mass in B minor, the more I'm convinced that the Gloria is the single greatest piece of music ever written. Like, it's just... It's astonishing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. Living? What about living composers? Who would you like to be? Paul Mealer, so you can scare the shit out of Dr. Jones.
Yeah, I do love Mealer's stuff, actually.
Obvious answer, Eric Whittaker. Live that lifestyle.
Oh, yeah, true. That's
and that hair, that glorious, glorious
John Rutter and be absolutely rolling in it all the time.
Yeah.
I suppose I should really be saying Eric's Eschenwald's, but...
Yeah. Hello, I wrote the Trinity Te Deum, and you just wet yourself at saying that.
Yeah. And now, because we omitted it last week, we are going to return to our fan fiction. This week, it's the fifth installment of the Time Traveller with the Extraordinarily Big Forehead series. Many, many thanks to Hannah. Sorry we couldn't read it out last week, but we're returning now, so it's going to be good.
With the case of deleted pixels, because we have had the finale, and I can only imagine how much tension you guys are in, because we've had the email, but we haven't read it. We've been dying to read it, but yeah, we're gonna have to wait one more week. And after that, if you, dear reader, are interested in sending us some fan fiction, please do. It doesn't have to be a big story like these guys have made it into. I frankly welcome the idea of smutty, filthy one-off stories about Dan and I, possibly as cavemen, possibly as spacemen trapped on the moon after an Apollo mission has failed and we only have each other's arms to embrace.
I positively shudder at the thought, but let's go.
Or write some saucy stuff that we do in an organ loft, I don't know. But yeah, if you'd like to send us some fan fiction, do please send it to spongyelectric@gmail.com. But over to you, Dan.
Cool. She says, Dear Simon and Dan, finally I've found the time to write another chapter of everyone's second most favourite fanfiction. Oh. She says, you're doing amazing, Josh. Sit back and enjoy. Sincerely, Hannah. So, without further ado, chapter 5, And I apologise if I cough and splutter through this. I will try my very best.
I will close the email so that I can't help Dan, but this is all new to me as well. I'm leaning back. Okay. Leaning back in the chat.
Here we go. Chapter 5. Simon dropped the plate he'd been cleaning. It shattered on the kitchen floor, but he barely noticed. He just stood in the kitchen, speechlessly looking at Daniel while trying to form a clear thought. He had to be lying, right? Time travel wasn't possible, and this weird man was just confused, so there was no reason to believe a single word he said. But somehow...
Fair, I think that's how I'd react if you just... Yeah. Or to be fair, if I just met somebody, I'm like, yeah, I'm a time traveller. Like, I think a smash play would be the least thing I'd do.
Yeah. But somehow, deep down, Simon knew that the stranger was serious about this, and that he had to believe him. Or else... Nice.
Oh god, I thought something really suspenseful was about to happen.
Yeah. Sir, Daniel asked, almost whimpering. Why did he think that this was a good idea? The man had to think he was insane, and he couldn't even blame him for it. What did he think was going to happen? He didn't find an answer to the question, how he would have reacted if someone had just thrown this sentence at him. I'm just gonna... Simon took a few careful steps backwards, trying not to cut his feet on any pieces of the broken plate. I'm just going to clean this up.
So he left the kitchen to get... Just to backpedal a second. Did you refer to yourself in your internal monologue as Sir?
No, it's Sir, Daniel asked. The character of me.
Yeah. I thought that in the internal monologue of the character, he was just like, oh, Sir, what have you done? Like, you're a little nerdy.
No, I think it's because I've just said this something and you haven't said anything.
Ah.
So I'm like, it's basically me being like, Simon?
Hello?
But Sir, because I'm an old man. He left the kitchen to get a brush. He felt overwhelmed, partly because there was a man claiming to be a time traveller standing in his kitchen. But there was more to it. I like it was only partly that.
Like, yeah, I've got just other a little issues bit. On my plate.
Yeah. Well, like the plate. That's the primary issue. You've just dropped it. For some reason, he just knew that Daniel wasn't lying. He could feel it. Simon wasn't able to figure out exactly how he did, but that wasn't important, because he could also sense great danger when he looked into the young man's eyes. He had this feeling before, not just in the moment he'd found out the stranger in the forest. For his entire life, he'd felt he was particularly good at figuring out what other people thought, felt, or wanted. Even though this ability... Oh, God. Oh, no.
That is so not true.
Oh, God.
I am so emotionally retarded. I really am.
Simon reading social situations. I don't know, we haven't told the New Year's story. One day we will, but my God.
Oh, that was hilarious. Come on.
That was not... Oh, yeah, not for me. Not for me.
Nothing bad happened.
Thankfully not.
I think if your daughter is that fit, you realise. I don't think it was news to her.
Please, let's not. Okay, returning quickly to the story. Even though this ability had been of good use throughout his life, he never thought of it as something special or unique. He just assumed that he was a little more sensitive than most other people, but he wasn't so sure about that now. What if it was some kind of superpower? Okay, he was exaggerating it. Fuck! Just read the fucking words! I think you're right. I think I need to have a lie down. I'm not well. Okay, let's try again. What if it was some kind of superpower? Okay, he was exaggerating a bit, but maybe Simon actually had some special ability that other humans didn't have. Assuming that Daniel was telling the truth, the existence of something like that would probably not surprise him too much. He went back into the kitchen.
I wouldn't be surprised if I turned out to be a superhero. I suspected, you know.
Yeah.
That time I made the glass disappear in the Serpentarium and...
He went back into the kitchen, determined to find out more about the stranger's history. So, how did you end up here? I mean, now. You don't think I'm insane? Daniel asked, feeling more relieved than ever before. He didn't even want to imagine what would have happened if Simon had called the police. I believe you. For now. My name is Daniel Moore. I was born in 1857 and I'm 18 years old. Fuck you. My father is a doctor. But I haven't lived with him for the past 5 years. We've never really had a good relationship, so I'm living with my aunt and cousins now. We don't have a lot of money, but at least we have a place to live and I don't have to starve or freeze to death in the corner of some street in London. Jesus, at least. Yeah, me. Well, what a horrible life.
You're a Dickensian character.
My father lives there, and all the diseases he used to talk about sounded horrible. Like most doctors, he only treats rich people. He's a very expensive doctor, so most poor people aren't able to afford seeing him.
Hashtag America.
Hashtag America. Most of them just die. It's frightening to even think about. Oh my god. I sound like the most heartless. Most of them just die. It's frightening to even think about.
The poor folks just can't afford to stay alive. Curb the excess population.
His voice started to shiver. Simon was listening, being shocked, yet interested. What about your mother?
Simon was listening, being shocked. It was like, yeah. I'm listening.
What about your mother? She died during... The young man started tearing up. She died while giving birth to me. My father, he blames me for killing her. He thinks that I'm cursed. He thinks that's the reason. Jesus Christ, what's happened to this story? Hannah, are you okay? Are you feeling all right?
Oh my God.
Good heavens
above. I'm not letting you get anywhere near me with a crossbow.
Jesus Christ. Nice reference, though. Very good, Game of Thrones. Come on, everyone. Round of applause for Simon.
Do it to myself.
He started sobbing. Unable to hold back his tears any longer. Without finishing his sentence, he started to cry uncontrollably. For a few seconds, Simon just stood next to him, not sure what to do, but then... This is you, reading a social situation. Just watching. But then, he wrapped his arms around the tiny stranger and gently started patting his soft hair. Oh no. Daniel rested his head against the saviour's chest, finally feeling safe in his strong arms. The two men remained like this, and for a moment, the world didn't feel like such a bad place anymore.
Aww.
What Simon and Dan didn't know was that soon this feeling would be nothing but a memory of a time that seemed so far away that they could do nothing but look back on it and wonder if they ever would be able to feel this way again.
Ooh.
To be continued.
Gathering storm clouds. Wow.
Yeah, crikey.
I've got to say, that was a roller coaster ride from what the fuckery to... horror to
it escalated very quickly.
Yeah, bloody hell.
Crikey. Well, thank you, Hannah. Thank you for that cheerful story.
I've got to say, Hannah, I really do love this one. I'm very excited to see, like, the board is set, the pieces are now moving, and we come to it at last, the great fan fiction of our time. For God's sake, stop coughing.
I'm sorry, I'm not well.
Right, let's wrap up the shit show before you can infect me over Facebook call. So, Daniel, what have we learned today?
Well, we started talking about Segway Incorporated, which was one hell of a segue. We had a brief chat about the inventor. Turns out that he's the son of... It was a comic book guy, wasn't it?
It was a cool family. I can't remember what his brother did. Oh, no. Was it his brother or was it his dad?
It was his dad.
Okay.
Dean Carmen.
Yeah, that was his name.
He's the son of Jack Carmen, illustrator for Mad Weird Science. Yeah, that's right.
For a podcast called about... The Wikicast, there's very little Wikipedia in this podcast.
I know. We spoke about Evensong, Symphonic Evensong.
Yeah. We talked about the guy who... bought the Segway company, died by driving a Segway off a cliff, and then we talked about death for quite a while.
Yeah, we did, for a long time.
And then talking about wiping our asses with baby wipes.
Again, just high caliber stuff.
Really. You know, the 50 cal of podcasts. And then following that, we had a correspondence corner, which was all over the place, but I think mostly very positive about us, which I'm a big fan of.
I'd say so. Yeah.
And then we started summarizing the podcast.
And now we're here.
Started from the bottom.
Hi, how are you doing? Good to see you.
Nice to meet you. I'm here. I'm Simon with Coffee McCockface.
Yeah, hi. I'm Coffee McCockface.
I definitely said cockface.
Freud, where are you?
Oh, dear. Okay.
Oh, dear. Ooh.
That's all for this week's episode. Don't forget to subscribe to us on your podcasting service of choice. You can like us on Facebook, and if you'd like to see our faces, check out our YouTube channel, Spongy and Electric.
Smutty fanfiction, Blade Runner 2049 reviews, and other thoughts on the show can be sent to us at spongyelectric@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Join us again for another tumble down the wiki rabbit hole.
And we'll see you next time.
Oh, fuck me.
Oh, we sound like such pretentious wankers going through our, like, if we ever release this at the end of a podcast, going through the correspondence, just being like, oh, for fuck's sake.
Hey, these guys,
get to the point, you twat.
We love all people who write to us, just to let
all,
you know.
All people. We love all people, especially if you write to us.
And especially if you say Simon, then Dan. Bye.